Coming up on Simply Superior.
Simply Superior, news and issues from a superior point of view.
Yes, that's Hail to the Chief, and no, it wasn't your imagination.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the President of the United States, Joe Biden.
The President really did come to Superior this week.
Hello, Wisconsin.
If you hear me across the river, hello, Minnesota.
Plus,
I play piano.
His goal is to write a song a day. So last year, he wrote 500. We'll catch up with our favorite theme song composer, Bruce Nelson. All that in the regional news and review after this.
When I am there, I'm just a happy, happy boy. I played piano since I was small.
Simply Superior, news and issues from a superior point of view.
Yes, that's Hail to the Chief, and no, it wasn't your imagination.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the President of the United States, Joe Biden.
The President really did come to Superior this week.
Hello, Wisconsin.
If you can hear me across the river, hello, Minnesota.
Plus,
I play piano.
His goal is to write a song a day. So last year, he wrote 500. We'll catch up with our favorite theme song composer, Bruce Nelson. Welcome to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. Although I've been producing this show from my basement for much of the pandemic, our real studios are on the campus of the University of Wisconsin-Superior. That's ideal for sharing the expertise and talents of faculty and students in a multitude of disciplines. But I never dreamed one of the biggest stories in the world would show up right at our doorstep. That was the visit on Wednesday by President Joe Biden and his entourage to the Yellow Jacket Union Student Center at UWS to highlight our region as a beneficiary of the recently passed $1 trillion infrastructure law. Symbolic of that act of Congress is an edifice we all know well and have been across, the Blatnik Bridge between Superior and Duluth. But before we get to that, let's remember that the night before, the President was in Washington giving his first State of the Union address, where the main topic was Russia's violent invasion of Ukraine. Given that severe situation, could a trip to Sleepy Superior, announced only 3 days before, still make it on his schedule? Well, word that it was a go came just in time for Superior's Bob Finsland, who volunteered for crowd control.
Yesterday we got the real invitation, and they had to go get a COVID test. And everybody had to be COVID tested within 24 hours, so we had to run over and do that. Worked out very well, except we had kind of a long wait outside to get in.
Right. So why Superior? Why do you think they're here in Superior? Of course, well, we love Superior.
I guess that's a good question. Why not Superior? But because it's a very industrial port, and we have a lot of infrastructure difficulties right now with our old bridge and other things. And I think he was here back in 2012, and maybe he liked it here. I don't know.
Well, you know, I noticed that most of the presidential people seem to come here during a campaign. Yeah. So this is a little bit different because...
Yes, he's not campaigning. No, he's not here to campaign. I think he's here to promote his new program. Of course, we listened to the State of the Union last night. He's here to promote his issues.
All right.
It's a good place to start. Good time to be here, too.
While the UWS marching band serenaded the early arrivals, the President and First Lady Jill Biden were landing in Air Force One at Duluth International Airport, then headed for an outdoor tour of the Blatnik Bridge in 20-degree temperatures that really wouldn't faze the locals. Accompanying them to UWS were Superior Mayor Jim Payne, Duluth Mayor Emily Larson, Wisconsin U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin, Minnesota Senators Tina Smith and Amy Klobuchar, and Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers and his Minnesota counterpart, Tim Walz, all Democrats, not surprisingly. They and the First Lady all served as warm-up acts, along with Union Bridge painter Gordy Smith. Here are some of their comments, beginning with Mayor Payne.
I told you Superior was moving up in the world. I could not be more thrilled or honored to welcome the President of the United States to one of America's most important cities. And I mean that Superior, Wisconsin is the future of the United States of America. After decades of decline, we are rebuilding this city, every element of our infrastructure. We are rebuilding roads and bridges. We're building the most innovative broadband network, and we are cleaning the greatest of the Great Lakes, all with the bipartisan infrastructure bill that President Biden and this Congress managed to deliver to cities like Superior all across the country. We are so proud.
Thank you, Mayor. It is such an honor to be with you all today. Thank you, Mayor Payne, for hosting us, for hosting the country today as we continue the hard work of building back better as a United States, as a United Twin Ports. Together, Duluth and Superior, we are an absolute model of what this bill is capable, what these dollars are capable of doing in the country.
Senator Tammy Baldwin, Senator Amy Klobuchar, and Senator Tina Smith.
He delivered on that promise when he signed the bipartisan infrastructure bill into law. I was proud to be the one senator from the state of Wisconsin who voted for it.
And Mr. President, we are ready to make it and build it in Minnesota and Wisconsin.
I am also glad to be here in Superior. Okay, I have to have one Minnesota line, which is a place with unrivaled views of Duluth.
Please welcome Governor Tony Evers and Governor Tim Walz.
Well, thank you all. It's great to share this stage with a dear friend and a great leader in Governor Evers.
Good afternoon, Wisconsin. You know, it's clear from the president's speech last night that he's committed to building an economy that works for everyone. And guess what? Investing in our infrastructure is at the heart of that.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the President of the United States, Joe Biden, accompanied by the First Lady of the United States, Dr. Jill Biden, and Vice President of the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, Local 106, Gordon Smith.
Thank you. You know, it's wonderful to be in Superior and Duluth, and places that mean so much to Joe and me.
I'm proud that here and across the country, my sisters and brothers are at work coating these bridges, and it's not just to make them look good, it's to keep them strong, safe, and protected from corrosion. I'm not someone who often gets up in front of people to share a piece of my story, so I certainly never thought one day I'd share the stage with the president.
And that was Superior Mayor Jim Payne, Duluth Mayor Emily Larson, Senators Tammy Baldwin, Tina Smith, and Amy Klobuchar, Governors Tony Evers and Tim Walz, First Lady Jill Biden, and Vice President of the International Union of Painter and Allied Trades, Gordy Smith. If their remarks sounded partisan, they were, even if it wasn't an election year visit. We'll hear from the other side of the aisle, albeit not on campus that day, in a bit. But now, here are excerpts from President Biden's speech at the University of Wisconsin, Superior.
Hello, Wisconsin. If you hear me across the river, hello, Minnesota. I'm Jill Biden's husband, Joe. And Gordon, thank you for that introduction. And Governor Evers and Governor Walz, and thank you both for welcoming to both your states. And Mr. Mayor, Jim Payne, thank you for the passport. And and Emily from Duluth, the mayor of Duluth, when we got off the plane, I don't think she had a coat on. She had on I tell you, you're a tough kid. Last night, I was with your senators and representatives, along with their colleagues in Congress, to speak about the State of the Union. Together, we sent an unmistakable signal to Ukraine and to the world that we, the United States of America, stand with the Ukrainian people. We stand with them. And Vladimir Putin's latest attack on Ukraine is premeditated and unprovoked. He's rejected repeated efforts at diplomacy. He thought the West and NATO wouldn't respond. He thought they could divide us at home, but he was wrong. We were ready. We sent countless hours unifying the European allies. We countered Russia's lies and truth. We countered them by letting them know what was being planned. And now the free world is holding him accountable. Putin is now isolated from the world more than ever and will continue to aid the Ukrainian people as they defend their country and help ease their suffering in the process. When history of this era is written, Ukraine will have left Russia weaker and the rest of the world stronger. Folks, they're amazing. They're amazing people. And we're growing stronger at home as well. We also had to invest in the country itself. America used to have the best infrastructure in the world, the best bridges, roads, airports, etc. Now our infrastructure ranks number 13 in the world, according to the World Economic Forum. You can't compete for jobs in the 21st century if we don't fix that. That's why it was so important to pass the bipartisan infrastructure law. The most sweeping investment to rebuild America in all of American history. When I signed that infrastructure law 100 days ago, we hit the ground running, announcing $100 billion in new investments. As I've announced last night, this year we're going to start fixing 65,000 miles of highway and 1,500 bridges in disrepair. Your governor is going to use some of that funding for this law to modernize one of the most important bridges in this region, the one you look out the window and see here. Look, the Blatnik Bridge, you all know this bridge well. It's a bridge that connects our cities and your cities and your state, a bridge that carries people to work and carries goods out of your port. You know, when the Husky oil refinery exploded in Superior back in 2018, this bridge was one that many of you took to get your families to safety. And you know it matters. But you may not know, as was mentioned earlier, the bridge is 61 years old at the end of its useful life. The corrosion over the years has lowered the weight it can sustain safely handle. And by the way, I wasn't long ago, you may have seen in all the news clips, I was in Pittsburgh. I arrived in Pittsburgh a little early. But thank God we arrived when we did, because just two hours earlier, a bridge that is as high off the ground as this bridge collapsed completely. Completely. You should have seen it. It was astounding to look at, for the same reasons this bridge is in trouble. And guess what? Thank God there were only a few vehicles on the bridge. No one was killed. You should have seen it. It was astounding how no one died. There's so many bridges this is the United States of America, for God's sake. So many bridges in a similar condition. And this bridge also has outdated design. Tight curves led to higher than average crash rates on this bridge. The bridge isn't alone. There are 979 bridges in Wisconsin, 661 bridges in Minnesota in poor condition, along with nearly 7,000 miles of highway between your two states that need repair. And now, after years of talking about infrastructure, we're finally getting it done. Yeah. Finally. Back in January, I announced the largest investment in our bridges in American history, a total of $40 billion in funding for bridge improvement. $40 billion, including $12.5 billion to fix the most economically significant bridges in this country, like the Blatnik Bridge. And on top of that,
On top of that, over the next 5 years, based on formula funding, the bipartisan infrastructure law will provide Minnesota an estimated $5.4 billion. And Wisconsin, $5.4 billion for highways and bridges. We sure don't want you to miss any of the Vikings-Packer games. Oh, man, you guys talk to one another? Well, we don't much in Philadelphia and Pittsburgh, but that's a different story. In addition, even more funding is available to the states through competitive programs. So I believe your governor are going to put their heads together and secure the funding they need to finally get this done, putting hardworking Americans on the job, rebuilding this bridge with U.S. steel, keeping commerce flowing freely, and keeping families in Superior and Duluth safer and better connected. But this legislation is about much more than the bridge or the bridges. It's about opportunity, opportunity across the region and across the country, investing in your port, your airports, and more. This isn't just about bridges and highways. It goes much beyond that. And I'm here at the intersection of all of these things, your airport, your ports, the river, the lake, the bridges, the highways. It's also about the historic investments we're making in the Great Lakes. The Great Lakes provide drinking water for 41 million people. They support more than 1.3 million jobs. I announced $1 billion from the bipartisan infrastructure law, accelerating cleanup of sites where polluted waters and wastewater treatments have given the Great Lakes and put them at great risk, including the St. Louis River, which flows between your states. One study found that for every dollar spending cleaning up the Great Lakes, we generate $3 to $4 in economic benefit. It's a good investment, and it's bad news. There's more fresh water in these lakes than any other single place in the whole world. Folks, it's not only the investment we're making in the Great Lakes. On the opposite end of Lake Superior, from where we stand, the Sioux Locks connect this lake to other Great Lakes. Those locks are a gateway, connecting the things that we make here in this country to the rest of the world. 7,000 vessels and 90% of America's iron ore move through those locks every year. That ore makes nearly all the high-strength steel that goes into American-made cars and appliances. In January, I announced nearly $500 million to upgrade the Sioux Locks. Moving goods faster while reducing costs, creating a hell of a lot of jobs and maintaining them. We're also doubling the investment we're making in our ports, including the Port of Duluth Superior, which was awarded an $8.4 million grant to make critical improvements. Along with a $12 million investment for the Army Corps of Engineers to reconstruct the dock wall, the vessel yard, and the Duluth Harbor Basin. Look.
And those were excerpts from the speech by President Joe Biden at the University of Wisconsin-Superior on Wednesday. Away from the crowd at the Yellow Jacket Union, there were protests from the left against Enbridge Energy's Line 3 project, and on the right, a group claiming former President Trump won the 2020 election. Not a part of those groups, but also not attending the speech, were the area's two Republican congressmen, Tom Tiffany of Wisconsin and Pete Stauber of Minnesota, who held a phone call with reporters earlier in the day. Tiffany challenged Biden to support projects that weren't on the president's list.
Let's get that refinery built in Superior. A number of you remember there was an explosion there a couple years ago. They're rebuilding it. That produces asphalt for those infrastructure projects. I hope President Biden talks about that is a really important thing to complete. Let's get those pipeline projects done, like Line 5. There is a permit that's being held by the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources right now for Ashland County. It is critical to get that done. That is some of the infrastructure that fuels America. and we need that project in place. And there's one other that's in the proposal stage over the next couple of years. That's the Nemadji Trail natural gas project to produce electricity for the Northland.
Likewise, Congressman Stauber criticized Biden for blocking precious metal mining on the Iron Range.
It was just a couple months ago where he removed two federal leases, not allowing Twin Metals to even move forward in the process. We want to make sure that the truth, the facts, and the science are allowed to play out, and then a decision is made. But I think for purely political purposes, the President Biden and the Interior Secretary Deb Haaland removed those leases, again, for purely political reasons, not following the science, which was devastating to northern Minnesota.
So what did the partisan crowd think? Here's Senator Klobuchar.
The president had fun standing out in that cold weather out there looking at the bridge. He was in great spirits.
It's not cold today.
You're right. It is balmy today. But the president thoroughly enjoyed it. It was great.
And here's Superior's mayor, Jim Payne, not at all holding back his view of the bridge.
Is this really that important of a bridge, you know?
Absolutely. This is the most important bridge in America. And the thing I love most about this visit is the president sees this city the way I see it. This is not just some random out-of-the-way place in the middle of the country. This is one of the most important cities in the country. We are at the head of the Great Lakes, where we have a major international harbor. We're connecting communities and states, and we're building strong, resilient neighborhoods. It's what the president believes in for the United States. This is not a Washington country. It's a Superior country.
All right, we'll go with that.
Politics aside, with the short notice and very limited seating, only a few on campus got an invitation. Juniors Alexa DeClavado and Miles Dempsey said they would have liked to have attended.
I think everyone who was allowed to go see them had to have a certain email sent to them, an invitation, and I didn't get one of those.
You're not on the list.
No, sir.
Is it a partisan thing?
Most of the people I've talked to, regardless of where they fall on the political spectrum, would have gone to see him. You know, it's not every day that you get a president up here in Superior, Wisconsin.
Lastly, they made a big deal about the Blatnik Bridge, of course, because we do need to replace it. What would you show him, you know, if he stayed five more minutes and said, hey, show me something else here?
I'd want to show them around my own house, 1621 Hewitt. That's where I would
want to. I don't know if we want your address on the radio, but that's okay.
No worries about that.
Well, what's so special about your house?
No, it's just there's only three other Americans in there, and none of us are from the same state. And I also live with three other international kids. So it kind of just shows what, like, all the best parts of college, you know, the mixing of different cultures and ideas and just people from all different places. And I just think it shows the best parts of Superior and what, you know, college kids can do, you know. And I feel like that'd just be a good message to have out in the world right now with everything else going on.
Reporting from our own broadcast home at the University of Wisconsin-Superior, and now the site of a presidential visit, I'm Robin Washington.
This is an urgent message that your car warranty's expiring and the government...
Coming up, our theme song writer has been busy with 500 new songs.
If you wish to have your warranty extended, then you need Simply Superior news and issues from a superior point of view. Gathered to mirror your life and interests with the goal of helping you to understand the world we live in and the region we hold dear. By sharing the stories and information you'll enjoy and want to hear.
Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington, and that is not me singing our theme song, although a lot of you have asked me if it is. I'm flattered by that because the real composer and performer is infinitely better at it than I could ever dream of being. He's also more prolific than any other singer-songwriter I know. Bruce Nelson of South Range has written hundreds, maybe thousands if I'm doing the math right, of ditties he's performed around the world, and he joins me now. Welcome to Simply Superior, Bruce Nelson.
Hey, really nice to be here, Robin.
We have you all the time. You know, people have officially pronounced your theme song as an earworm. Is it earworm or earwig?
Earworm. Earworm, I think.
Okay.
Yes. Actually, I get that a lot. You know, I have people sometimes angry about it, saying, Now, that song that you wrote the other day, that's been in my head for 2 days now.
But we realize that that means it works. And again, people have come up to me and they tell me they think I'm singing it. They congratulate me on it. I should probably just say okay and keep going, you know. But
I give you permission to do that if you'd like to. You just say, well, thanks.
You know what? It works. Going back, there was a song contest that we had. You won. And you really did the assignment in ways that we hadn't really anticipated, because you talked about what the show's about. And occasionally we played a whole thing so people can hear the lyrics referring to what this show is about. So it's probably a little bit more than I wanted to say about that, but I do get asked it all the time, and overwhelmingly favorably. And if we didn't want to play that, we have a lot to choose from your repertoire alone, because you write a song a day. Or more. So what have you been up to?
Or more, yeah. I try to do one every day, but I did 500 last year.
That's more than one every day.
Yeah, but that's because I'm retired now, and it kind of long been my goal. I always thought, well, you know, I wonder how many I could write if I didn't have to be running off to school in the morning and things like that. And it was a COVID thing, really, too.
Well, yeah, right.
Time on my hands and trying to stay safe here. So go to the piano or work on guitar and come up with song.
So I asked you this before. You've lived around the world, including in Russia, teaching at the American School in Moscow for many years. And obviously, Russia and Eastern Europe and Ukraine is the most serious subject in the world right now, places you are quite familiar with, which we'll get to in a moment. But so many of your songs are satire, which I personally love, but I have to say sometimes satire doesn't go over that well in our neck of the woods, and people don't always get it.
I've had that same thing. You know, I did one time where I told this whole long, convoluted story about how there was this Romanian couple that wanted to adopt me. And I said, well, I was pretty excited because my parents were gone now. And so I said that I'd really like to do that. But they said I needed to send my banking information. And I said, well, I didn't dare send my banking information because a guy from India had called me a couple days before telling me my computer had a virus. So I did this long, complicated story, and I had people writing to me, oh, I think this is a scam. And I said, well, Bogdan and Michaela, they seem like such nice people. I'm pretty sure that they just want to have me join their family.
And that gets into political songs, and you've written no end of those. They're fun. Again, I enjoy them, and you certainly have enough material. But with the polarization these days, it may not be the best choice in every venue.
Yeah. One of the things is I try to be kind of have gentle humor about things. And, you know, I do have a lot of people that say it helps them get through the day a little bit. I have people that say, well, how can you remain so positive and happy? I thought, well, I'm not. But I try to come across that way in the songs many times, you know. And there are ones that will sound a little angry, I think, because there are things that I feel pretty strongly about. But that's why I'm a songwriter, too.
How about sharing something with us? What do you got there out of your repertoire of 500-plus from the last year?
Well, you know, I have been doing quite a bit of different things recently. Partly, we have a relatively new 5-month-old granddaughter.
That should be a benign enough subject, right?
Yes, and I will tell you that my demographic on YouTube, you can look up the analytics on a lot of different aspects of who's listening. And my group is the 50 to 75. A lot of those people have grandchildren. So I started writing a lot of baby songs, actually writing them for my granddaughter to sing to her. And she just seems to love them. One of the ones that I wrote was when she was just seemed ravenous and I'm hurrying around the house trying to get a bottle ready for her. I wrote a thing called Poor Hungry Baby.
All right. Well, we are speaking with the composer, teacher, retired teacher and performer Bruce Nelson of South Range. And here is Poor Hungry Baby.
Baby wants her dinner and the baby wants it now. Poor hungry baby, probably give her formula cause we don't have a cow. Poor hungry baby, better get it quick cause she's chewing on her fist. When she's that adorable it's too hard to resist. If I'm slow to serve her then she gets a little pissed. Poor hungry baby. Poor hungry baby, you're like a little shark. looking for a bit of food, morning till dark. Poor hungry baby, mighty chubby cheeks, amazing how you've come along in only 13 weeks. Oh, the baby's getting ravenous, I think it's pretty clear. Poor hungry baby, the way that she is wailing kind of traumatized my ear. Poor hungry baby, better heat the bottle up and get it to her quick. At the perfect temperature, it's really quite a trick. Babysitting's not a job just anyone would pick. Poor hungry baby. Poor hungry baby, I'm trying to do my best, but that look you've given me has got me stressed. Poor hungry baby, you're sad until you're fed. I know you want your mama, but it's grandpa here instead. Oh, baby wants her dinner and she's making a lot of noise. Poor hungry baby, can't distract her anymore with any baby toys. Poor hungry baby, she is looking frantic cause her bottle isn't there. This is not a baby but a starving grizzly bear. Finally got her ready, not a minute left to spare. Poor hungry baby, poor hungry baby, poor hungry baby.
And that was Poor Hungry Baby by Bruce Nelson of South Range. We were just speaking about your appeal to different demographics that you've studied on your YouTube channel. But, you know, I also do get comments about the theme song from younger people. One fan you may not know you have is Shane Nelson. He is a wonderful singer-songwriter right here in Superior. And he also thought I was singing it. He actually was trying to get me to sing it when I was interviewing him. I don't know. He might sing it someday. So there you go. Google may be misleading in its analytics.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, you have spent a great deal of time teaching in Eastern Europe for people, again, who don't understand nuance. That doesn't mean your affiliations were Soviet. Well, you have to say that. You lived in Russia for how long?
18 years in Moscow.
And this is very much an American, teaching at the American school, right? Which is an American thing.
Right. It was the Anglo-American school. So we British, Canadian, and American embassies all help sponsor that school.
So, you know, given that you're so inspired by current events, what would you, written about the situation in Ukraine right now? It is deadly serious.
Yeah. As I said, we were 18 years in Moscow, but one of our really lovely fall vacations was a trip by train to Kiev. And we just thought, gee, what a beautiful city. Lovely people. And so we definitely have a soft spot for the Ukrainians, and worked with a number of Ukrainians that were living in Moscow and working there. But so just today I wrote a piece called Angry Little Man, reflective of Putin and, you know, his, I think, trying to deal with his demons as he takes them out on the rest of the world. So I haven't recorded it yet. I'll read you some lyrics here, though.
Yeah.
There's an angry little man in a massive, massive room where he's told the assembled crowd of how he ensured their doom. He will march his troops next door just to make all hell break loose for their Slavic brothers there, who through killing he'll reduce. He believes his brilliant plan will preserve a culture rich, but this plan only makes sense to this twisted little man.
Yes, man, right. Good choice.
I have to comment on Putin. We were in Russia when he suddenly rose to power, and we watched the country as it became more stable after Yeltsin and then really began to become kind of frightening under Putin as he had journalists killed and things.
Well, back to something lighter, and we do need cheering up. What else would you like?
Well, I do a lot of comments on politics, but I also do a lot on just culture in general and cultural trends. And one of the ones I couldn't help but find amusing was, you know, some of the conspiracy theory things that where people will believe sometimes the most absurd things. I don't know if you've heard about the birds aren't real movement.
I missed that one. And with my name, you know, that one is of concern to me, but go ahead.
Well, I thought it was wonderful. On NPR one night, they were interviewing two young men, and they decided that they wanted to put out a new conspiracy theory. And they said, we'll just make it as absurd as possible so people will get that it's just humor. But unfortunately, there are a lot of people naturally that believed it was real, like the Onion articles that sometimes people will post and go, can you believe this? So I had a great time writing a song called Birds Aren't Real. But these two guys that started it, I think they quit their jobs and just began to run this organization. Their conspiracy that they've concocted is that birds are not real. They've all been replaced, and these are now like CIA operatives, and they're automated. And when they line up on a power line, they're recharging. And a lot of times you'll notice the birds will come around your house. Well, it's because they're listening to you.
All right, let's hear Birds Aren't Real by our guest, Bruce Nelson.
You know, birds aren't real. Birds aren't real. Don't trust the folks who say they are. Birds aren't real. Their mere existence sounds bizarre. To have creatures that can fly overhead just passing by ain't the kind of thing that I would be so dumb as to believe. Birds aren't real. The ones you see are CIA. Birds aren't real. They listen to each word you say. They will rest on power lines and recharge there for a time. I don't trust them just 'cause I'm not taken in. This whole ridiculous counterintuitive notion that birds are harmless little creatures and not government drones sent out to monitor our every move is a joint disinformation effort of big tech, big government, and big bird. Birds are here to monitor and gather information. Birds today aren't real, they've been replaced with automation. Military birds like geese will fly in a formation. It didn't used to be that way. Now believe me when I say birds aren't real. The evidence is everywhere. Birds aren't real. Research it yourself if you dare. I can't explain too much, but here's the deal. I studied online and learned birds aren't real. I know, I was shocked too.
And that was Birds Aren't Real by our guest, Bruce Nelson. And yes, you heard it here first, but if you just remember the title to the song, please do not repeat it at cocktail parties saying you heard it on public radio and it's got to be true. All right, tell us where we can hear more of your work, your 500 songs a year and more.
On YouTube. Under Bruce W. Nelson.
All right. So I think we have about 490-something more to go. What else you got?
Probably another cultural phenomenon, and that is telemarketing. I'm sure you've gotten more than one call at different times saying that they're urgently trying to reach you about your car's warranty.
That's what my landline is apparently for.
It seems to be. That's the only thing it's for sometimes, but... I decided I had to write a song about this. It's kind of a singing version because I thought, well, if they could at least sing these things, it might be more interesting. So I wrote a song called An Urgent Message About Your Car's Warranty.
This is an urgent message that your car warranty's expiring and the government requires us to notify you now to warn you. If you wish to have your warranty extended, then you need to go and press 3 so that we can tell you how. We are under obligation to the UN High Commission on the Rights of Auto Owners in regards to warranties to make certain you're the owner of the car that is in question. And to do that, we require all your banking info, please. We must warn you, do not hang up. If you do, we must report it to the FBI, whose agents may be monitoring this call. They have snipers in your neighborhood who plan to shoot your unprotected car, which we remind you has no warranty at all. So why risk annihilation of your 1980 Buick at the hands of federal agents who are monitoring this call? If you'll just read off your credit card, you'll stay in their good graces, and your car will not be blown to bits, then crushed into a ball.
And that was the singing version of A Call We've All Gotten, Notice of Your Car Warranty Expiring, by our guest, Bruce Nelson of South Range. One more to take us out?
Let's see. How about a song that is really near and dear to me called I Play Piano? Because I just started really playing guitar, I suppose, about 4 years ago. I've kind of really grown to love playing guitar, but I've always been known as a kind of jazz pianist and a lot of improvisational piano more than anything. So recently I wrote a song just called I Play Piano.
It worked for Billy Joel, right?
Yeah.
All right. Bruce Nelson of South Range, the real Simply Superior theme song singer, thank you for joining us.
Oh, such a pleasure. Thanks so much, Robin.
I play piano, I pound the keys. Ain't reading music, I'm just playing what I please. At the piano, when making sound, I feel my soul is finally getting off the ground. At the piano, I find my joy. When I am there, I'm just a happy, happy boy. I played piano since I was small. The keys were there, and to be fair, I played.
Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington, and I'm joined by Danielle Kading, the Superior-based reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio News. Hi, Danny.
Hi, Robin.
And Rick Lubbers, the executive editor of the Duluth News Tribune. Hello, Rick.
Hi, Robin.
So before we get to the in other news this week, there are a few things to wrap up on the presidential visit. I have to say I've covered several of these, both here and around the country. And if I can give a rare compliment from a typically jaded journalist, this was probably the most buttoned up I've ever seen. When they told us his speech would begin at 2:15, I thought that meant 4 o'clock, and it was 2:15. In fact, I almost missed Mayor Payne's opening remarks because I thought he was somebody doing a mic check. So, Rick, what did your reporters experience?
Much of the same. We're used to waiting around for hours for politicians to show up for their appearances. And Air Force One touched down at the Duluth International Airport about 12:10, just about exactly 2 hours before the scheduled speech. Of course, our folks had to be there a little bit early for security checks and all that. But for the most part, it was on time. He was on the plane for a few minutes. The president and first lady descended the stairs about 12:30, and of course were greeted by various dignitaries, mayors and governors before heading off.
Mm-hmm. And Danny, how about you? Any other takeaways, especially since we're having kind of a love fest here that journalists don't normally do?
Well, I mean, Biden definitely touched on many of the statements from his State of the Union address. Of course, he touted that the bipartisan infrastructure law would help fund and modernize the aging Blatnik Bridge. But he did over-exaggerate at times. I believe he said that there was $40 billion for bridges under the infrastructure law, and that that was the largest investment in bridges in history, when it's the largest investment since the national highway system was built. And he also said that they were going to build 500,000 charging stations for electric vehicles, even though the infrastructure package only included about half the amount needed to pay for that. The rest of that was supposed to come from his stalled social spending bill, Build Back Better, that sought to tackle the climate crisis, childcare, and other items, but has been held up in Congress. You know, he also mentioned rising inflation as people have been really been getting hit hard at the gas pump as of late with the Russian invasion of Ukraine, talking about how, you know, the pandemic has affected supply and demand and saying that the administration would lower costs by increasing manufacturing and building more products in America to reduce reliance on foreign supplies. But the Associated Press, as part of their fact check, kind of highlighted that that's not necessarily something that would go hand in hand, and that, you know, part of the reason that we see a lot of manufacturing overseas is because there are lower wages that drive down costs for products.
Well, I guess the moral is watch what you say in a room full of fact checkers, right?
Yeah, well, I'm glad that people are watching for this, doing the analysis so that people can get the right information.
Right. So kind of in other news this week, Minnesota Governor Tim Walz, of course, was part of the entourage, but he's been making frequent trips here. Rick?
Yes, he brought his statewide public safety tour to Duluth on Friday, February 25th. and he was in town to receive feedback from local leaders on how they could spend their slice of a proposed $300 million spending plan. Wall said the city could stand to receive nearly $1.5 million annually over the next 3 years if his budget is ultimately adopted by the legislature. The funds would give cities, counties, and tribes broad discretion to spend on issues ranging from recruiting and hiring more police officers to purchasing new equipment and technology, as well as investing in social programs aimed at reducing crime. For instance, Police Chief Mike Tuscan said his agency has found success in pairing social workers with police officers to address issues involving mental health and addiction. But those programs are at capacity with more clients than the department could possibly serve. Walls credited the local leaders for taking the initiative to try out new programs, noting that those can be difficult to fund through standard revenue streams.
Well, again, coming off of the speech, two of the main topics, of course, were the Russian invasion of Ukraine and, again, our bridges. And somehow these got connected in a controversy over lighting Duluth's aerial lift bridge.
Yes. One day after issuing a press release in defense of the city's decision not to light the aerial lift bridge blue and yellow, which are the colors of the Ukrainian flag, Mayor Emily Larson announced plans to reverse course in a gesture of international support for Ukraine. Noah Shuckman, Duluth's chief administrative officer, explained to the city council on Monday night that while the LED system installed on the bridge in 2020 allows the city to change its hue at will, city staff was inundated with requests to change up the lighting for a variety of different causes and events. He said the situation put the city in an uncomfortable position of having to weigh the merits of certain requests versus others. And so in April 2020, it announced that it would no longer entertain requests to light the aerial lift bridge in commemorative colors. The city, however, did allow for the lighting of Anger Tower to be changed up in recognition of certain causes and events. So the previous weekend, that landmark tower was bathed in blue and yellow lighting, but a number of residents continued to question the city's inflexibility. Larson wrote to explain her change of heart on the matter Tuesday morning. She said that sometimes you make a decision based on important variables like rules and fairness, and then understand that those things really don't apply. The community is right. Thank you for reminding me of who Duluth is. So Larson announced that through Sunday, the aerial lift bridge and Anchor Tower will be lit in support of and in solidarity with Ukraine.
All right. Well, speaking of Duluth city government, there's a new city councilor or maybe an old one?
Yes, a familiar face is returning to Duluth City Council. After narrowly losing his at-large city council seat to challenger Derek Medved 2 years ago, Noah Hobbs will return to the same political post. 28 people applied to fill a council vacancy that was created February 14 when Councilor Medved stepped down, citing the growing demands of his expanding chain of gas station convenience stores. The council ended up interviewing 24 of those applicants on February 24, and three finalists, including Hobbs, advanced to another round of questioning Monday night. Hobbs assured fellow councilors that he intends simply to serve out the remaining 2 years of Medved's term and will not use the position as a political springboard to seek additional time on the council. After the lengthy interview process and a majority vote to tap Hobbs as Medved's successor, the council unanimously passed a resolution 8-0 to appoint him to the vacant seat on Monday night.
Well, Danny, back in Wisconsin, lawmakers heard testimony about the 2020 election again.
Yeah, former state Supreme Court Justice Michael Gableman was hired by Wisconsin Republicans to investigate the 2020 presidential election. And on Tuesday, he told lawmakers that they, quote, ought to take a very hard look at decertifying the election. And this was all part of a final report that he was supposed to issue on that investigation, although he vowed it wouldn't be the last. And the gist of it all is that he said private grants that were used to run the election basically constituted election bribery. And he called on lawmakers to eliminate and dismantle the Wisconsin Elections Commission and fire its commissioner. But basically, in his report, Gableman focused on millions of dollars in private election grants from the Center for Tech and Civic Life. And that's funded by Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg. And so he argued that because the bulk of that funding went to Green Bay, Kenosha, Madison, Milwaukee, and Racine, you know, the state's five largest cities that it basically amounted to election bribery because it was used to boost Democratic turnout. The idea that the legislature should or could decertify the presidential election has almost no support either in the courts or among lawmakers from either party in the legislature. Repeated efforts by former President Donald Trump and his allies to decertify the 2020 election in the state and federal court have gone nowhere. You know, the legislature's nonpartisan attorneys have even said that such a move would be impossible. And so Governor Tony Evers issued a statement in response to the report calling the investigation a circus and an embarrassment for the state. And Republican Assembly Majority Leader Jim Steinke said in a tweet that he would do everything in his power to prevent putting politicians in charge of who wins and loses elections.
All right. Well, we've been speaking with Danielle Kading, the Superior-based reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio News. Thank you, Danny.
Thanks, Robin.
And Rick Lubbers, the executive editor of the Duluth News Tribune. Thank you, Rick.
Thanks, Robin.
You can stay updated on these stories and all the regional news anytime at WPR.org and DuluthNewsTribune.com. And that's it for this edition of Simply Superior. We leave you with more of the music of Bruce Nelson. And since you've heard him on piano and guitar, how about cowbell? I'm Robin Washington. Stay safe, everyone.
I play piano a little. I also play some guitar. I tried my hand at the fiddle. I didn't get very far.